Today, we're talking about how to expand what mental health is to you with Dr. Nicole Lipkin.
Thanks for having me, Madison. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. Before we get into this conversation, how would you like to describe yourself to our audience? Where did your journey into the world of mental health start?
Well, I'm a psychologist, but I'm also an IO psychologist, which means I'm a clinical psychologist and an IO psychologist, which means my background is in clinical psychology. But I do a lot of that work in organizations and businesses. So consult with leaders and leadership development, executive coaching, all of that. But I also have a large psychology practice, about 40 therapists based in Philadelphia. And my journey was very strange. I wanted to be a dancer and an actress, but I chickened out and became a shrink because my brother is an actor. And I figured one of us, you know, we had to have that stability. In college, I was a dance major and a psych major, and then decided to work in the field after I graduated and ended up falling in love with it. And I also had my parents were very psychologically minded and very emotionally intelligent. So it was always something that was very embraced it. We embraced it in the family. We embraced talking about things and opening up and being open. So it kind of made sense. And I realized in school that psychology is something you know, we're humans, we're not robots. And so everything applies to human behavior, right? We need to understand human behavior. So the profession of psychology just applies to everything.
And how, like, it sounds like your parents played a really big role for you in becoming who you are today. What are some things at home that you learned? Like, what was the attitude towards mental health? What was that like growing up with parents who were so emotionally intelligent, it sounds like?
You know, it was amazing. I was very lucky. My parents were both school teachers in the South Bronx, and they were tough cookies, and they dealt with and in that time period, the South Bronx was very tough. But they were the parents that went in early to sit and eat breakfast with a lot of kids who didn't have food that would come into the school to eat, and so they could be an ear for kids. And a salary of a teacher is not a lot. So they also on the weekends would sell jewelry at flea markets and antique shows. My brother and I were kids, and we would go help them, and we were annoyed about it. We wanted to watch our Saturday morning cartoons. So when I was 5 and my brother was 11, they said, "Stop being bored. We don't want to hear you complain anymore. What business do you want to be in?" And we said, "Toys," because we're kids. And my father was a math teacher, so he gave us $400, and he taught us how to keep the books, and he brought us down to Manhattan to the wholesale district, and we picked out our inventory and our toys. My mom was an English teacher and an artist, and she taught us how to make our signs and how to speak and how to kind of like creatively attract people to our booth. And my grandfather was a salesperson, so he taught us how to sell. And we were in business. And it was very interesting because growing up in a family like this, obviously, we didn't know what we were doing, and we would fail a lot. We'd mess up a lot, and we'd run into problems both with the business and in life. But they would never save us. They would always just sit down, listen to us, help us talk, help us think through the problem, and encourage us to solve it and support us. And it hurt a lot of times because we obviously, you know, we were kids. We wanted them to solve the problem, but we had to think through it. And we had to figure it out. And, you know, I didn't realize what they were teaching us until, you know, I was older, until much later, and also until I became a parent and an adult. They were teaching us resilience. They were teaching us grit and perseverance. And, you know, unfortunately, my parents passed away when my brother and I were young. And our lives could have gone very different directions, but they didn't because of what they instilled in us. Again, that resilience and that persistence and the ability to critically think through things and to have a mindset that was positive and kind of go-get-it-ness. Those are lessons that are so that were just invaluable. So even though they passed away young, I wouldn't trade them. I wouldn't trade that in a minute for a second because of what they instilled and what I have for the rest of my life.
It sounds like your parents, like, what was that conversation like with your parents when they would, you know, sit you down and be like, hey, we're not going to solve this for you?
Oh, it would be, you know, it would just be like, okay, let's talk through this. Okay. This is the hurdle you're facing right now. Let's talk through this. What are your thoughts about it? How are you feeling about it? What are different ways that you can approach? What are different ways that you can approach it? And obviously at different ages, the language or the vocabulary was different, but basically they were saying, okay, let's think it through. Let's step back from the emotion. Let's think it through. Let's think about alternative solutions. Let's also process your emotions and why it feels that way and the impact that that's having. But what they were doing is they were helping us think through, they were helping us recognize that our emotions are one thing. The problem solving is another thing, and that sometimes emotions can influence problem solving, but when that happens, sometimes it can cloud how we're thinking. So like ultimately looking back, that's what they were helping us think through. And interestingly, as a psychologist, the other thing they were helping us think through were cognitive distortions. You know, the things that go on, like the way our mind plays tricks with us, the funky stuff that happens in our brains. And you know, like, for example, catastrophizing, right? So like if my, you know, husband goes out and with Charlie, our child, and they don't call, my husband doesn't call when he says he's going to call. And, you know, my brain can go, oh, they're dead on the side of the ditch. You know, obviously, clearly they got hit by a car. This is it. Or it can go like, oh, you know what? Maybe his phone's dead. Maybe this is happening. Or let me just make the phone call. So interestingly, what my parents were also doing was they were teaching us how our mind can kind of just like run loose sometimes and play tricks on us, and how it's important to challenge our cognitive distortions that all of us have. And they were helping my brother and I, at least I can speak for myself, think through how we were thinking, like have awareness about how we were thinking, which is so important. It doesn't mean I don't fall into the trap sometimes, but I have awareness at least. It starts with self-awareness. You have awareness at least of how the ability to step back and think about how your brain is thinking.
That sounds like such an incredible childhood to develop that resilience. My goodness.
We're lucky. I was lucky. They were also really fun. We also played a lot and had a childhood. You know, they were also really, it was just fun.
And what changed for you when your parents passed away? I'm so sorry to hear that you lost parents so young. But what changed for you, and how did you get through that without them being there to talk to you?
So, you know, my dad died when I was 12 and my mom died when I was 19, like beginning and end of adolescence. And, you know, I, again, having that foundation and having that support and was the baseline for me, right? You know, to be honest, the way I got through, there was a lot for us to do. There was a lot to handle, and all of a sudden, you know, not knowing what was going to happen or where things were going to come from, it was intense. And to be honest, looking back in hindsight, I would say I probably shut down for a couple of years just to be able to do, you know, kind of like halted, stopped the emotion, did what I had to do to just get by and do the daily tasks and finish school and, you know, figure out the financial stuff, the estate with my brother and all of that stuff. You know, figure out where money was going to come from and how to survive, all of that stuff. I went into survival mode. I would say it wasn't until my mid to late 20s did it start kind of seeping a little bit. Like it started kind of to leak out, like, oh, this sucks. Like I probably held off my grieving till I was able to do what I had to do, like do the tasks that I needed to do, and then had some space to grieve. And for me, for me, that worked. For someone else, it might not have worked. But for me, that worked because there were things that I had to get done to survive, right? And so I think looking back at that time period, I think I learned how to survive. I think I learned how to persist. I think I also learned something that's not always healthy. I learned how to stuff emotion, which is not always healthy. But having said that, sometimes you have to compartmentalize. Like, I think right now is a great example. We're all going through this pandemic around globally. And none of us have ever been through, like, people who have gone through wars, they've experienced something, like, again, different, but something like as, oh my God, what's going on like this? So I think, you know, I'll go back to what I was saying. What was your question again? How did you get through?
I
think the thing I was saying with sometimes with emotions, it is, sometimes you do have to come, it's not always healthy, but also sometimes it is healthy and you just have to compartmentalize. And I think it's a little bit representative of what's going on right now. We're all going through this global pandemic. And for most of us, we've never experienced anything like this. Sure, people who have been through war have experienced this absolute trauma, all of this. But for most of us, we've not experienced anything like this. So we're just figuring out what life is and how to do this. So for a lot of us, compartmentalizing is actually super helpful. Let me figure out how to live day by day right now with the resources that we have, with the situation. And then once I figure out what I have to do, again, to survive and live and function, then I will cope. So I think that compartmentalizing sometimes emotionally can be a strategy that works. However, compartmentalizing for too long and stuffing for too long is not healthy, obviously.
How do you find the right balance? What is a way that you can determine, okay, I'm compartmentalizing too much here, time to process, or vice versa?
You know, I think our bodies and our minds show us the signs. So, you know, I always like to think of our minds like a shelf, right? A shelf you go buy at IKEA or something like that. So you go, you get your shelf, and you get home, and you go to put up your shelf. And if you can figure out how to put up your shelf, you're amazing. But you put up your shelf, and you know the little directions that has that little guy saying, like, don't put more than 50 pounds on this, right? So you put your shelf up and you start piling your books and your tchotchkes on that shelf and more books and tchotchkes, and you're at 30 pounds, you're at 40 pounds, more books and tchotchkes, you're 50 pounds, you're at 60 pounds, and your shelf starts to sag, right? Because the shelf said don't put more than 50 pounds on it. But you put 60 pounds, a little bit more books, a little bit more tchotchkes, and then all of a sudden your shelf snaps and you're like, oh my God, this was such a cheap shelf. The thing is, it said don't put more than 50 pounds on it. Our brains are the same way. We have a shelf, right? And we have all the signs and symptoms of a sagging shelf, but we often ignore those signs and symptoms until we snap, right? And the signs or symptoms are things like if you're constantly feeling agitated. We shouldn't constantly feel agitated. The signs and symptoms are like if you can't concentrate, if you used to be someone that could concentrate and all of a sudden you can't concentrate, or if you have to go buy something and you can't remember once you show up there, you can't remember what you went there for. You know, all of us have these signs and symptoms. There's tons of them. It's just if we choose to ignore them or not. If we choose to ignore them, eventually we snap. If we choose to pay attention to them, then we can deal with what's leaking out in the moment. So I think right now is, again, a great example. We might be compartmentalizing and just trying to figure out how to cope and how to get by day by day in this new situation. But if your sleep is starting to be interrupted, if your appetite is starting to change, if you're finding that you're snapping more easily, or you're more fatigued, or you can't focus, or whatever it might be for you, that's your body and your brain saying, hold on, stop. Give me a minute to process and to breathe and to think through and to feel through this. And I am sure a lot of us are going through that right now. You know, it's kind of like we're this big solid, you know, box that we get from Amazon, but there's a hole in it. And that hole, the air is starting to seep out, right? Probably for each and every one of us, but it's our responsibility to take the space in the room that we need, even if it feels like there's absolutely no space and room to take. 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute to just do a check. Okay, this is where I am. This is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling really, really, really sad. And this is why I'm feeling really sad and I'm grieving, because my life has just completely changed. Our lives, our collective lives have just completely changed forever. And I'm grieving that. Labeling it, saying it, talking to someone you love, connecting. We need to take these few minutes in our lives to not just do and to process a little bit.
It sounds like, too, in addition to that, there's so much distortion going on. There's, you know, there's how do you balance staying informed with feeling completely overwhelmed with information and starting to create these stories in our minds?
It's a great question. It's a great question. And this is true of just mental health in general. You know, anxiety begets anxiety, stress begets stress, sadness begets sadness, negativity begets negativity, right? We know that. Like, so striking the balance between being informed and being uninformed is really important right now. When you process, and I'll give an example. When you're feeling really, really down or really negative, and you keep on staying stuck in that negativity or stuck in that sadness, and you keep on processing it over and over and over and over again, what happens? You often feel worse, right? Or you often go into rabbit holes that you didn't want to go into. And, you know, I hate saying this out loud, because I am a psychologist and we should all be talking about things. But here's the thing. At some point, we also need to forward think. We also need to time out and stop the cycle of processing so much and living so much in that, like, ugh, and think forward and action oriented and give our brains a break in that negativity or in that stress and all that. That's why sitting and watching the news 24/7 is a super, super terrible idea. Because the more we keep on getting stuff thrown, inundated with this information, the less we give our brains a break to just be and to process and to feel any positivity or any optimism about anything. So again, I think if there's any message I can give anyone out there, that's the message. Just time out. Time out of processing the magnitude of this, watching the news, constantly talking about it. Like, if you're doing Zoom parties with your friends, you know what, or your family, 2 minutes talking about it to get it off your chest, to vent, and then move on to good things. And then move on to, like, catching up and fun things and Zoom dance parties or whatever you need to do. Because that's the only way to break the cycle of anxiety begets anxiety and sadness begets sadness.
That sounds like amazing suggestions. And a huge difference for everybody right now. Thank you for sharing that. I also have some more things. I think it might be relevant.
And actually, Madison, you know, one thing I want to actually say that I forgot to add. Sometimes we can't stop ourselves from processing it over and over, or watching the news, or whatever it might be. Sometimes we don't have the control over ourselves. So here's a suggestion. When you don't have that control, like, totally normal, totally fine, but when you can't seem to stop yourself, you know what? Go turn on a puppy or kitten video, or go watch something funny. Like, let something or someone else snap you out of it. Because it's super hard to stop that. I'm not saying that's easy. So let someone else snap out. Like, have funny things. Like, I like having like funny mugs around, like, you know, or like my husband happens to be a comedian. So I get snapped out of it, or I like looking at my cats and playing with them. Like, it just, you know, surround yourself with funny, cute things.
And your baby too. I mean,
the baby, Charlie. Yes. I forgot.
It feels like that's so true, Nicole, that you said that, because that's literally what I've been doing the past couple days, like cat videos, stand-up comedy shows, like,
yes,
Seinfeld, Friends, like, and it's so true. It's so helpful because it gets, like, when you try to get yourself out of it, you get into, like, a paralysis. And
yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, no one needs to be a hero. We don't need to figure out how to all of a sudden snap our brains out of it, like. Go use the resources and the funny things and the cute things that are out there.
Absolutely, yeah. It sounds like there's like so much more that others can really do for us than we actually think. Like, we don't have to brave it, like you said. So.
Right.
And I guess this, some of these questions are actually kind of relevant to now. In your professional and even personal opinion, what is the core issue when it comes to supporting others with their mental health, especially now? It might, some people might be afraid to talk about it. Some people might want to talk about it. Like, how do you navigate that space with loved ones and friends?
I think you have to let the person lead, you know. I think, you know, it's very hard to have a family member or a friend that's suffering from a mental health issue, and it's so you know, compelling to want to just jump in and help, or like even shake someone out of it, like, you're gonna be okay, stop. You know, it's really hard to have a loved one who is struggling. But if there's anything I've learned about that, both personally with people in my life and professionally, is that you can't control other people. And it's hard, as much as we want to. We can't control other people, can't control other people's healing processes. The only thing we can do is be there and move at someone else's pace that they're willing to go, and allow them to feel, not only to intellectually know, but to feel that you're there for them. On the same token, it's just as important to make sure that you're creating your space, because supporting someone that's struggling with mental health issues is extremely difficult and extremely taxing and extremely nerve-wracking, especially if the mental health issue is serious. Not all of it is serious, especially if it's severe. So you have to make sure, we can't be martyrs in this. You have to make sure you're also taking care of yourself and taking the space that you need while you're being and be supportive of someone. So that might mean taking some time off or taking a break from it, or, you know, communicating in different ways, whether that be, you know, obviously the face-to-face communication through media now is what's happening. Sometimes a text can give a little space, or whatever it might be, or an email can give a little space. So balancing what the person needs as well as what you need is important. Easier said than done, obviously.
What are you trying to accomplish this year, and what is next for you in your mental health journey?
So, you know, it's interesting because everything's so uncertain right now. I feel very like, you know, I'm always a very goal-oriented person, and I remain goal-oriented, but I also remain very open to being flexible and agile with whatever happens. And I think agility is one of the most important skills that we can develop. And again, going back to what my parents taught me, that's what they taught too. So I feel very thankful that I have that in my blood and can develop Young Leader Project, working with kind of targeting children when they're really wide open and learning and shaping cognitively. So that's why we're targeting 6 to 11 to help teach them and their caregivers, their parents, social emotional leadership skills. And our first product just launched, and it happened to just launch during when this pandemic started. It was, the timing was very weird, but our product's called Hey Kiddo. And it's a, it's to get better conversations at your fingertips. It's a text-based subscription that gives parents conversation starters, coaching tips, and activities texted to their phone for the hope of building the habit of more meaningful conversation over time, so that when bad things happen, your kids want to talk to you and know to come to you. So it's starting that habit of conversation very early. But the thing we're doing now, given that we're all going through this and so many parents are home with their kids and are trying to work from home or just be at home and all this, and no, like, I mean, let's face it, we're all losing our minds a little bit with this. So what we're doing is, for subscribers, we have social emotional learning lesson plans. In addition to the conversation starters and the activities, all of that, so they can download to supplement the math, the lesson plans that schools are sending home. Additionally, for non-subscribers, for anyone, the team, it's a group of psychologists and child experts. We're all writing blogs on like staying, like just for parents and adult and just people. Just how to stay sane right now and adding some humor to stuff. And then also developing, sending out activities, fun activities for kids to do and to that either the family can do together or kids can do to free up some of their parents' time. And also some videos we're going to be doing on Facebook Live on our Young Leader Project page. So kids can do different activities and things like that while also learning, but we're trying to keep it fun and give kids the space to play and parents the space to laugh a little bit and to get some resources from this while we're all going through this, and to make sure that their headspace is okay and being dealt with.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, it's weird timing, very weird timing.
and where can
And all the information will be there, including the blog and the activities at home. To connect with me, you can good place to connect would be LinkedIn. So Dr. Nicole Lipkin, that's NICOLE and last name LIPKIN. Or my website is www.equilibrialeadership.com, which is EQUILIBRIA leadership.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I've learned so much from you, Nicole, and I appreciate your time. And I'm excited about implementing what you shared today and starting to share more humor with my family and pay attention to when I'm dissociating things, and also being careful about taking in too much information and like balancing that out. So you've left me with some awesome tools, and I'm sure you guys at home feel the exact same way. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Madison, and thank you for doing what you're doing. I think it's fantastic.
My pleasure.
Thank you.